Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to speak with author, artist, Mustafa Dada. He's also a professor. And we're going to talk about lots of things, but one of the things we're going to talk about is his book, The Portuguese Massacre of... I was going to mess this up. Where... can you say the name of your book?
Cause I can't. Yeah, it's Viriamo. In other words, Viriamo. It's like William, and therefore Viriamo or Viriamo.
And I can read the rest in colonial Mozambique, but that word was killing me. Welcome to the show, and thank you for helping me for that. How are you today?
I'm doing splendidly well. A dash of cold and a cough, but I don't think it should substantially impair our discussion.
Oh, I know. It's really a bad season right now.
Yeah.
For my guests that are listening right now, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, excuse me. I was born and brought up in Mozambique, educated by Cambodians and then Jesuits, and then I entered in Sufi monastic orders. I defrocked myself when I was about 21 or so. I went back to Africa. I went to Zambia where my parents were. I stayed there for about 8 months and did some voluntary work, and then headed off to Britain. I think that's really where I was trained as a social scientist and historian. I did my undergraduate work at Sussex University in the School of African and Asian Studies, and then I was at Oxford, where I did principally my work on the revolutionary decolonization, of Lusophone Africa. My first work was on Guinea-Bissau, and thereafter I entered the academy first as a professor and an administrator, and then later on as an administrator, and I went back, to teaching and research. And the book, that you just mentioned is the culmination of my work, in the research field on Mozambique's colonial war. And so that's in a nutshell.
And you're a professor. You're also an artist. Tell the audience a little bit about your art as well.
Well, I was heavily influenced. My artwork. I principally am a sculptor, and I do work in bronze and sometimes in fired clay. I was heavily influenced by two principal artists. One was Horner, Auguste Horner. Because at one stage when I was, after I finished my undergraduate work, I wanted to be a sculptor, and I went to Paris, and that's where I wanted to live and possibly develop my portfolio to enter the Beaux-Arts. Well, things, panned out differently. And the other influence was with Henry Moore, the fairly well-known sculptor in Britain. And so my work is exceedingly tactile. Later on, for vanity reasons, like any other, or perhaps because my students that I taught felt, it was genuine enough of my work that they called it sensuous abstractionism, which is essentially abstracted work that generally appeals you to first touch and view that as your principal medium through which to appreciate art. So that's my sculpture works. I've done a series. The first one was called the Creation series of four pieces: Fatima, Atlas, Unborn, Eve's Awakening, and Adam's Fall. Then I did an erotica series, of which, the body movement seems to have been the most popular, and then went on to do the Atlanta period of works. And I'm now finishing, my new series on the California period, of which the first set was Bone. And so there we have it. I've had an exhibition, of course, at the Fusion Gallery, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning a solo exhibition shortly, sometime, perhaps, you know, in the new year.
Now, when you write your books, they're nonfiction, and your art, of course, is creative. Do you ever combine the two?
Oh, that's a damn good question. I have never done a combination except once. When I was doing the research for my book, and it was an intense period of investigation, there was a very strong suggestion that because of the gory nature of the massacre, that you know you had to take time off so that you could rejuvenate and you know not be so permanently damaged. And one of the things that I did was to do some creative work, that is to say, expiate some of the darker images that I had absorbed as a result of the interviews, you know, with survivors of the massacre. I did two pieces that I therefore seem to, you know, that answer your question. One was called The Lion Spirit, or Fondoro, which was the lion spirit that apparently roamed the region where Viriamo was. And it was beckoned by a sorcerer, you know, who would seek the lion spirits, so to speak, in intercession, particularly in bringing rain, you know, to this drought-stricken area at the time. And so that particular image of the lion spirit or the catwalk was one of the first pieces I did. The other one was a piece celebrating, you know, one of the survivors of the massacre called Eve, and I called it Eve Ascending. And again, it's a piece that is very easily can be looked at, you know, by Googling me and Eve Ascending, you know, on the net, and my website has it too.
It's funny because as a writer of fiction, I'm actually doing my first nonfiction, but as a writer of fiction, I get a lot of my stuff out by pouring it into my fiction, and you get your stuff out by pouring it into your art. Isn't it interesting that everybody has to have an outlet of some type? Do you journal as well, or is it strictly pouring it into your art?
No, I don't. And I actually sort of, you asked me the question about combining the two, so, and I gave you the answer as to how I have combined the two once. But generally speaking, I have not sought to, you know, to intermingle the two. I think that they have always been, I've kept them separately. That's not because of not wanting to, it's just that that's really how it has happened. Most of my research is, most of my writing is very tight and very controlled, in the sense that I'm writing as a professional historian, and as you know, as a professional historian, you are immensely aware of the culture of evidence and the extent to which, you know, you have to control the narrative, not to go outside the bounds of factual sustainability. Which is not really what fiction does. In a fiction, you are allowed really the full reign of your imagination. But having said that, people who have read my work constantly have urged me to consider very seriously to write fiction. And part of the reason is that in their view, it appears as if my work as a historian seemed to be very alive and therefore would be easily be translatable, so to speak, were those skills to be deployed to write fiction. So I haven't tried it.
I think that would be a really interesting exercise. Just write a short story and see how you like it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because it will be charting into unknown territory for me. You know what I mean. Professional fiction writers, you know, cannot become overnight professional historians. I mean, you know, it takes decades of training and practice, you know, to be one. And so, you know, and you always sort of go to the territory where you're most comfortable. And in my case, you know, when I have my facts and I can ruminate over the facts and I can actually sort of look at various culture of evidence, I can actually craft the narrative in the comfort, you know, of sustainable evidence. But, you know, writing fiction is much more difficult because you can use facts, bend and twist and break and rejoin it, you know, at your will, because that's not the focus, you know, of your art.
That's true.
Do I make any sense?
Oh, yeah, because, like, writing, you do a lot of research, especially if you're using something historical. I'm actually working on a thriller like that. But, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I mean, if you are a historian, which, I mean, I studied to be an archaeologist when I was young, so I understand what you're talking about. But it's fun, and it's always fun to try something you're scared of. You should give it a shot.
Well, someone said, you know, you ought to, if nothing else, you know, you ought to write aspects of your life. And I have always poo-pooed that idea as being a little bit pretentious, you know. People who write autobiographies have something very substantive to say about what they do and what they have done. But of late I've been thinking, well, perhaps taking aspects of your life and seriously considering a fictional narrative might be a way to go. I'm not so sure.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think that would be a great... people write... An autobiography and a memoir are different. A memoir is just a person reminiscing about different parts of their life. An autobiography means you're famous. You're like Agatha Christie or about Abraham Lincoln didn't write one, but somebody famous wrote an autobiography. A memoir is just a normal person. So maybe that's what they're referring to when they're talking to you about that.
Yeah, I think that makes a much better sense. Now, I will be much more comfortable writing aspects, you know, of my life and what I've done than to write an autobiography. It sounds... Autobiography, you know, has a very a toxic ring for me. I'm not so sure I would be comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, the President of the United States would write an autobiography once they retire. You know, they always do. But, you know, normal people that are, whatever aspect of their life they're talking about, their childhood, their, you know, their research, their whatever, they do memoirs. And, I mean, I think it would be very interesting with the varied life you led to write a memoir.
Well, that might be, actually something that I would seriously consider doing. And it has a sufficient level of comfort for me to, as a kind of a transition to fully fledged fictional work. I think that might, You know, it would enable me, because after all, memory is an exceedingly flawed instrument with which, you know, with which to craft factual narratives. But, you know, it can be done. After all, you know, that's what I did in my last book, you know, is to collect evidence and then present it, you know, as best I could, you know, and as factually as I could. So, in a way, I think that putting together aspects, you know, of one's life specifically to a topic and or a theme may well actually provide one with the bridging gap that is needed, you know, to be in an uncomfortable zone but bearable. And that in itself could transition into something much more fictional at the other end. I'm not so sure. Yeah, I'll think about that seriously. Though, how would you actually go about writing a memoir yourself? I mean,
I already did.
Oh, okay.
I'm in the middle
yeah.
of it. I'm at the end for the process. Mine is because I turned 50 and I had a real struggle. I never worried about age. Never, ever. I didn't care. And then when I hit 50, it was like a brick wall for the first time ever in my life. And that's why I wrote it. Everybody has a different reason for writing one, though. That was mine. In fact, it's going to be coming out soon. I didn't mean to talk about myself. So.
No. I'm all ears. But does this mean to say that it was effectively the fear imperative that propelled you to do this?
No, it's more like therapy.
Oh. Oh,
I started by writing down, you know, the old thing where you write down the positive parts of your life and the negative parts of your life, blah, blah, blah. But then I started doing something a little different. I wrote the experiences of my life, you know, since I, all the things I've been through, all the people I've met, all the places I've been, all the travels I've had, both on my own and with my family. And I went, you know what? This is a heck of a life, and that's why I started writing it.
That's interesting, because I would have to have a pretty clear cut idea of, you know, why would I engage in something like this before I actually sort of, you know, did it, so to
well,
speak.
Well, that was my clear-cut idea to get through it. I mean, it took quite a long time to actually get it done. I mean, I started this literally when I turned 50, and I'm 54. So it's not something that I did, oh, wow, let's just write it. I mean, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I've never written nonfiction, ever. I'm a fiction writer. So this is it was so different for me. So, like I said, but I've always done that. I've always jumped in the deep end. I've done that since I was a kid. I wanted to be an actress, so I did. I wanted to be a writer, so I did. I wanted to travel, so I did. That's just me. I've always done that. I wanted to be a radio host, so I did.
Yeah.
But anyway, so back to you. Anyway, that was not expected.
No, I was very interested. I mean, you know, clearly sort of it has resonances, you know, for people who want to engage in memoir writing, in that you want to be, you know, you want to be really hitting some kind of hitting a wall or crossing the Rubicon to consider the experience and the passage, you know, as sufficiently intense and emotional to merit sharing, you know, beyond just yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also, like I said, I'm a fiction writer, so
yeah.
It's not something that I would normally even think of. I don't mind trying all different kinds of fiction, but I never wrote nonfiction. You've written your whole life nonfiction. So
right.
Fiction is your scary thing.
Yeah, largely because, my immediate, historians, training kicks in. Is this sustainable? Where is the evidence? To what extent are you stretching the evidence beyond credulity? Is this what really, really happened? How can those reading it and, understand this text? Is the text actually contributing to the broader knowledge, in the literature in the field? Those are the kind of things that you as a historian, professional historians, are trained to do. So, fiction is a different ballgame.
Yeah, but there are very famous historians and archaeologists who have both written fiction.
I have no doubts. I have no doubts about that. And they obviously they felt A, capable of doing it, B, comfortable doing it, but C, may well have felt an ease to cross the genre. In my case, I think that one question always is at the back of my mind, namely, have you contributed sufficiently in the body of the literature as a historian, so that you can now gallivant off, into the sunset, and cross the frontiers into fictional work. That's one thing I say. Is this all that you have to now say as a professional historian? And my answer is actually no. I can think of, endless number of things that I still, have to do.
That's true. I mean, the thing that I find fascinating is that when I was studying, when I was in college, one of the people who really lit my fire in archaeology was one of my text writers, because he didn't just write about ancient Egypt. He wrote it in such a way that it just lit my imagination. It wasn't a dry tomb. And later on, I found out the man did write fiction. But when he wrote archaeology, it was pure archaeology. He was one of the best writers, still is. But he also wrote fiction because he painted pictures, even in his archaeological text. He lit a student's imagination. And I think since you're getting that kind of feedback from your books, it might be a fun task for you to try it.
Well, actually, that's very interesting. I actually sort of have been told that, my work is immensely vivid, exceedingly passionate, and very direct, and that the historical writing is immensely readable, which is not a norm in my profession, as you know. I mean, we tend to
dry text.
Yeah, but this isn't.
Exactly.
It is dense of... Go ahead.
No, that's exactly what I'm... That's my point. You're saying it. Go ahead.
It's dense and it's exceedingly intense, yes, but, it's not unreachable. And, given effort, I think, you can see when I am leading the text. So, in a sense, I think that all of this points out to asking me, you should seriously consider writing fiction, and that's such a proposition. I should take it to heart and not just quite simply dismiss it. I have dismissed it to this point and felt, I know how to write historical works, and I'm comfortable, and I have lots of things still to say. But, you know, there's constant nudging in the public's eye to tell me, yeah, this is all very well, but I think, you know, your skills, you know, could basically will find a much greater expression in the fictional area.
Right. I agree. We don't have a lot of time. Do you have a website where people can see your books as well as your artwork?
Right. For the latest book coming out, Amazon.com has got probably the most accessible. If people just typed in Dada or Mustafa Dada and Viriyamu, they will find it. Bloomsbury Academic at bloomsbury.com, and if they just, you know, typed in my name, they will find it. If they go to Facebook and typed in, you know, Facebook Viriyamu, there is going to be, you know, a website, and Viriyamu is spelled out as Viriyamu. If all of that fails, I think, you know, your listeners just, you know, should send me an email at Dada, D-H-A-D-A, at mindspring.com, mindspring.com. And I'll be very happy to point them out, you know, to the appropriate books, to the book sites, you know, where they can actually go and buy the book, read it, and perhaps, you know, post some reactions. On artwork, I think, you know, I'm very easily accessible. Anyone, you know, should just type in on a Google Dada and sculptures, and you will hit about four websites of my work. And shortly I'm putting up, you know, a professional website, a revamped website, you know, for my sculpture works and for direct buy and sale. So all of that is, I hope that helps.
Oh, yeah. And do you have, like, a show coming up local here in San Diego or anywhere else in the country where people might want to go and see your work up close and personal?
I am negotiating at the moment, you know, with the gallery. And so we are under sort of fairly tentative negotiations for a major exhibition for my collected works. But the moment I get that, I will post it, you know, on my website, as well as send, you know, and create essentially a new website on Facebook, you know, Dada Sculptures. And, you know, people should just quite simply go there. And if they send me an email, I will be very happy to put them on a mailing list.
Okay. All right. We're at the end. I want to thank you very much for taking your time and chatting with us.
The pleasure is entirely mine. Be safe and be well, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about my work.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.